Welcome to Glory Light Chapel, the radio ministry of Glory Light Live. I would like to welcome everyone sitting in this room, and also those of you who may be tuned in through internet radio from wherever you may be sitting on the face of this planet. It is our privilege that you are here, and it is our prayer that you will receive a blessing from our message today. We hope you receive a blessing from this message given to us through Pastor J. Fred Calkins. Sermon number 8. 2, 2, 3.
I'm starting at the beginning. Genesis. Chapter 1, verse 1. And that's where my focus is today, is Genesis 1, verse 1. Because there's a lot there. Three phrases. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. So three points. In the beginning, when did this happen? At the beginning. Now, was there anything before the beginning? Well, as you read this story, God was there before the beginning. But that's the beginning for us. When you want to know what's happening in this world, you discover, God tells us, first thing in this world was me. God says, I was there. In the beginning, God created. So, that's the beginning for us. Whatever happened before that, there's been plenty of speculation. But this is what God tells us we need to know. Okay, so we know that there was before the beginning. Yes, God was there, and He made promises. And my mind's only so big. God's revealed us what He knows we can handle. And there's we're going to get into some more of that. But even when you go to science, and some of you have studied science, science has tried to figure out all this thing about the beginning, and they have very carefully analyzed this universe, and they've measured the stars, and they have figured out everything's expanding. And they say, well, if it's all expanding, then there must have been a time when it was all at one point. And so the scientists are saying that there was a point in time when energy became matter. They often call it the Big Bang. And I say, yeah, I know what the bang was. God spoke. And he spoke loud enough that things happened. When God speaks, things happen. We'll get into that in some subsequent lectures. But there was something that happened. Scientist says it has to be. But then I find God says, I was there. You don't need to worry about that. This is where the beginning was. And I'm the one who started you. And I'm telling you what's going on. Now, we do discover something here. This is God. And don't think that you can put God into a box. He's bigger than you are. He's even bigger than you can imagine. And I can imagine some pretty interesting stuff. But He's bigger than that. So, I like God. He has revealed to me enough for me to understand Him. And He's given me some things that, wow, this is special. Here's one thing in this chapter that we're going to spend more time on later, but here it is, verse 26. He says, let us make man in our image. Now, we'll have to study that, our image part. But the us, that means there's a plurality to God. He's not just a individual entity. There's us involved. That's huge. And then my stepmother, she shared with me, and this was probably about a year ago, but she said, you know, it says that God is love. And you can't love just yourself. That's not love. That's selfish. And even when there's two of you. When I do nice things for my wife, I know that it's going to come back and bless me. So it still can be very selfish. But when there's a third one involved, some of you are parents, you know exactly where I'm going. When there's a third one involved, I can do something nice for my child, and my wife is so happy because that's her child that's being loved on. For love to be pure, and the New Testament word for this pure love is agape, but for love to be pure, it has to have at least three entities to be able to share pure, unselfish, giving love. That you'll find in 1 John 4:8. God is love. So in order for that to be true, this same idea of plurality comes. Now, an interesting verse that parallels this Genesis 1 verse 1, I'm turning over to John. And look at this. You'll find those three elements still referenced. In the beginning, okay, we remember that one. That was the very same phrase, was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. So we have the in the beginning, God, but it's a little more complex here. Let's get the third verse here. All things were made through Him, and without Him nothing was made that was made. So now we discover that Jesus was the voice of God that did the creating there in Genesis chapter 1. What special stuff is this? God knits this Bible together from cover to cover that it all fits together and reveals Himself and His love. Paul affirms this because Paul adds to this phrase, talking about Jesus and talking about creation, I'm in Colossians chapter 1, verse 15. He, Jesus, is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For by Him all things were created. So Jesus is spoken of as the Creator. Things that are in heaven and that are on the earth, visible and invisible. Now how's that for something? We think about the visible things, and even for you blind folks, you think about the tangible things, things you can see, feel, and touch, but He says there's some things that are not visible, and God says, I created that too. It goes on to say, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or principalities or powers, all things were created through Him and for Him, and He is before all things, and in Him all things consist. And it goes on to add one more phrase that we're not going to get into much this week, but it's just something to say, oh, what a God. He is before all things, in Him all things consist, and He is the head of the body, the church, who is the beginning and the firstborn of the dead, that in all things He may have the preeminence. So Jesus is also claiming to be head of the church, creator and leader of our group. What a God. What a God of love and grace and mercy and kindness. You may have had to study some evolution when you were in school. It's really, really being pushed today, and it has been for the last 50 years, maybe more. I want to point out that both creationism and evolution flunk the science test. Now, recognizing that, it's as a creationist, I say, well, okay, that's fine. As an evolutionist, it would give me a lot of trouble that it flunks the science test, but here's how it works. Science says that what you postulate should be able to be proven by repeatability. And so somebody does a scientific study and writes his paper and says, this is what I've discovered. Somebody else in a different part of the country, different state, different part of the world, he reads that and he says, well, let me try it and see if it works for me. If it doesn't, then there's not repeatability. And we sometimes gave a bit of a hard time to those scientists in Kentucky that were trying to prove that tobacco was good for you. Well, there's money involved. And so, but when the scientists in other states followed through and did those same experiences, they said, no, that nicotine, that's killing you. But you realize what's at stake here. And I lived in Kentucky long enough that I can pick on Kentucky. I know some things there. But trust me, this kind of stuff goes on all over the world, where the scientists say, this is what we believe, and then somebody else looks at it and says, you're pulling my leg. Okay. Creation as an act of God. God says, this is what I'm doing, and I'm doing it when I want to do it. I am not at your whim. You don't tell me when to do or what to do. So he says, I created it. You can believe me. I told you what I did. You can't repeat it because I did it, and I did it once. Now, I believe. See, I read the back of the book. Chapter 21 and 22 of Revelation says he's going to create a new heavens and a new earth. So he's going to repeat it. But it's not at our whim. It's at his whim. And he tells us when and how. It's pretty precious to put this whole thing together and say, what a God. But the science test would be that I need to be able to prove that he created, and I can't. I can just believe it. Well, the same problem when you look at the evolution story, because they postulate what I call macroevolution, change of species from one to another. Even Darwin, 200 years ago, it wasn't quite that long ago, but 175 years ago, when he was writing his book, Origin of the Species, he declared, if we cannot document a change from one species to another, evolution doesn't work. Well, we can't. But the scientists, so-called today, have conveniently blinded their eyes to this suggestion that Darwin said, and they says, oh, well, we're satisfied. What are they satisfied with? They're satisfied with what I call microevolution. We can take things and we can change them up a bit. There were some moths in England that tended to be white. But as the smog started impacting London, over the course of 20, 30, 40 years, these same kinds of moths tended to be a smudgy gray color. Well, what's going on? The white ones were being picked off by the birds, and the gray ones were able to hide on the trees better because of the smog. It's been years ago, about 30 years ago, I decided that I was going to do some chicken breeding. And I developed a particular breed of chicken, Buff Chanclair. Now, the Chanclair breed had been developed in Canada, and for some very specific reasons, they wanted it to have a cushion comb rather than a big flashy comb or even a rose comb. They wanted to have just a neat little cushion comb so it wouldn't freeze. I don't know if you've ever seen a chicken with a frozen comb, but it definitely hurts them. So it wouldn't freeze because of that cushion comb. They wanted it to be a good strong layer, lay lots of eggs, and they also wanted it to be a pretty hefty breed, so it would be dual purpose, plenty of eggs, but also good for meat. And for whatever reason, I decided I wanted to breed, instead of the white Chanclair that had been developed, I wanted to develop a buff color of Chanclair. And so I studied the various breeds that they'd used to bring it together. There was some Leghorn in it. There was some Wyandotte. Seems like there was some Roc. Cornish. There were at least five, maybe more, different breeds that we brought in there, and one's got two of them are three parts, and three of them are each one part. So of the nine parts, it's a complex breeding program, but I did it, and I ended up with some chickens that looked like Buff Chanclair, and some people bought me out. It's probably just as well, because I have other things in my life now. But it was very interesting. That's microevolution. That's massaging things. How many breeds of dogs are there? There's over 100 in the American Kennel Club. And there's another 200 or 300 around the world at least. And the scientists say they all go back to the wolf, and they probably do. But yet we have carefully selected, so some of them are teacup size, they call them, and others are 100, 150, 200 pound monsters. But they're specific breeds of dogs. Microevolution, easily proven, but it doesn't jump the species barrier. It's still dog, it's not cat. Now they play with cats, some of them. Some of them kill cats, and some cats will really be mean to your dog. Strange world we live in, but they never cross the species barrier. We can breed the mules and the horses together, the donkeys and the horses together, and get mules, but they're sterile. So we really haven't accomplished any species change, and the donkeys and the horses are closely related anyway. So there's some hybridization that's going on, but the scientists, they can't do this macroevolution. So they flunked the science test too. Both creation and evolution require faith. Well, you don't have to guess where I'm putting my faith. I have a God who has revealed himself in his holy word, and he has revealed himself in my life. I choose to trust him. I choose to rest in his grace. I choose to walk with him and allow him to use me for his glory. It's not about me, it's about him. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. That's good enough for me. I like God. I'm so glad he did that. And that gives me place and purpose. I know where I am in the scheme of things, and I know why I'm here. Not like it. I'm like God. He's given me reason to live and reason to share. Let's pray. Gracious Lord, what a God you are. We thank you that you have revealed yourself to us and that you invite our worship. We thank you that we can worship you in spirit and in truth. We praise you and we thank you in Jesus' holy name. Amen.
Sermon number 8:2-3.
He that dwelleth in hell shall laugh them to scorn. The Lord shall have them in derision. Thou shalt dash them in pieces like a pot. like a boat's vessel, like a boat's vessel. Thou shalt dash them in pieces, like a boat's vessel.